I've always been the one to say the first goodbye. Had to love and lose 100 million times. Had to get it wrong to know just what I like. Now I'm falling. You say my name like I have never.
What is up, Wisconsin? Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. Welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We are hoping to be joined shortly by Greg Jackson, the Deputy Director of the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. We're going to keep our eyes out for Greg. We hope he is arriving soon. The reason that Greg is joining us is that today, President Biden made a statement talking about what has been accomplished by the White House Office of Gun Prevention over the last year. It was established a year ago, and Vice President Harris took a key leadership role in ensuring that the public safety that we all deserve in every neighborhood is something that we can achieve. And that, my friends, requires gun violence prevention. And it's not just about common sense gun regulations that we all generally agree with, right? It's not just about that. It's about early interventions and a lot of other tactics that have been deployed in cities like Milwaukee to help try to address gun violence. This is a topic and an issue that's especially close to my heart because the Office of Violence Prevention was one of the first at the city of Milwaukee, was one of the first established in the nation. And it was originally run by a good friend of mine, a guy by the name of Reggie Moore. He now heads up an institute studying this at Freidert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. So I look forward to speaking with Greg Jackson as soon as he can join us. And listen, if you're listening and you may be yelling at your radios, well, there's still a lot of crime and things happening and what are the results and how do we? Yeah, there is still crime, but violence prevention is not a light switch. It's not something that you do overnight. It takes, frankly, folks that are willing to actually talk about the origins of gun violence and to take the active steps over years in communities to make the sorts of investments to stop this epidemic of gun violence. I see that Mr. Greg Jackson has joined us. I am so happy to have you, sir. You're going to want to unmute, of course. We've got that all right. In these days. There you go.
Hey.
Greg Jackson. Hey, friend, Deputy Director of the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, sir. I super appreciate you making time. Big press conference today talking about the accomplishments of this office led by Vice President Harris since the year of its founding 1 year ago. Tell us, what are some of the accomplishments? What are the steps that have been taken by the White House's Office of Gun Violence Prevention? You're good to go, sir.
Okay, no, I think we broke up a little bit there, but but yeah, excited to be here. Excited for these executive orders and actions. You know, I think just to give you a quick overview, I mean, this administration has been committed to addressing this crisis since day one. This is the first president in history to name this as a public health crisis on December 21st of 2020. And since then, we've implemented over 40 executive actions. We rolled out an additional $30 billion for public safety and passed the first law on gun violence in 30 years, the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. But this is another step building on that momentum where we will be rolling out executive orders to really focus on emerging firearm threats. We have seen machine gun conversion devices popping up in communities across the country. I mean, just this weekend in Birmingham, Alabama, 4 individuals were killed and 18 injured at the hands of one of these machine gun conversion devices, or commonly known as Glock switches. But we're also looking at 3D printed firearms as part of this effort. And through this executive order, we will start to launch a interagency government-wide effort to crack down on how these devices are getting into our communities and creating, literally creating weapons of war in neighborhoods throughout our country. We're also gonna be looking at school safety and how can we strengthen school safety and specifically active shooter drills. The vice president, she traveled the country, and throughout all of her youth visits and college visits, she saw that nearly every young person had experienced this active shooter drill. But what we also know is that there's very little research on how effective these drills are, how much harm they're causing, what trauma the youth are experiencing, and how prepared they are equipping our student leaders and our education leaders in dealing with these threats and these violent moments. And so we'll be launching an effort to really look at how do we strengthen the research, refine these practices, make sure they're as effective as possible, but also so we minimize the harm and trauma of our youth that are having to experience these exercises and frankly are thinking every day about the threat of being shot in the classrooms. And so those are two orders, but there will also be a dozen executive actions announced as part of this. Everything from expanding resources for community violence intervention programs to strengthening our ability to trace and track injuries from firearms across the country, as well as rolling out important resources for survivors and communities that have been impacted by violence on how we can help them heal, recover, and really bounce back from these tragedies that we know nearly 100,000 or over 100,000 Americans are experiencing every year.
Mr. Jackson, you mentioned there's so much there, right? And one thing that I wanted to lean into a bit is intervention and this idea that gun violence prevention is not just accomplished by enforcing our criminal codes or enforcing our gun regulations, that there is what I'm going to call an upstream intervention. We know that trauma replicates itself and accelerates sometimes genetically across families within neighborhoods, and that this intervention aspect, the getting involved before the violence happens, is so critical. If you could speak to that a bit, sir, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, we know that there's a couple ways that we can get there. One, you know, when it comes to violence, it's very simple. There is typically a person in a moment of crisis that has easy access to a firearm. And so the intervention work is really where we focus on that moment of crisis and how do we help that person either not get there or help them navigate through that moment. And so one of the key interventions, if they're having a mental health crisis, that's why we created and funded the 988 Crisis Lifeline. So you have someone you can call. If you're in schools, that's why we added 14,000 school-based mental health professionals. So you have a trusted voice that you can talk to in your schools. If you're out there in a community, that's why we're funding community violence intervention programs that can connect with you with trusted messengers that can help you de-escalate and think about, okay, what is this conflict? What is this crisis? How do we solve it without causing legal harm? And then even in hospitals, when we know that someone's been harmed or shot, that's a key moment to intervene. When a loved one walks in and sees their family or their friend injured, harmed, or worse, lost to gun violence, the first idea is to retaliate and to get that vengeance. But having hospital-based violence intervention programs can engage that person and de-escalate and cool things down before they react emotionally. So we're investing in all of these intervention efforts while we're also thinking about how do we keep firearms away from that person in that moment of crisis. And that's why things like making gun trafficking a federal offense are key, because that's how we keep guns out of the hands of those who are already prohibited or already at risk or already at vulnerable or vulnerable and can't take the legal means to get a firearm. That's why we enhanced our background check system for purchasers under 21. So now we can look at their mental health records, look at their juvenile criminal history to decide whether or not they can legally buy a gun during that background check, because that's a way to make sure they're not in that moment of crisis when they're making that decision to purchase. And so we're continuously looking at ways that we can, again, look upstream to make sure that access to firearms aren't easily available in that moment of crisis. And how do we help people navigate that moment of crisis without harming themselves or others?
Mr. Jackson, thank you so much. That is Greg Jackson, the Deputy Director of the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. I have one observation and then one greeting that I'd like to pass along to you, sir. Here's my first observation. As we ask folks to not seek retribution and vengeance, to not try to get even, and we are building systems to provide care, to interrupt that cycle, it seems to me an incredible irony that we have a presidential candidate that embraces vengeance, violence, and retribution. And the greeting that I wish to pass along to you is I worked with my good friend Reggie Moore for a few years at the city of Milwaukee, who's one of the fathers, I will say, if that is an okay way to express it, of the violence prevention movement. And so from us folks here in Wisconsin and the city of Milwaukee, and from Mr. Moore himself, thank you, sir, for your great works. Please continue to help make our community safer. This is what public safety is about, everybody.
We'll do. Thank you so much, Maggie. And thanks for sharing those greetings as well.
Yeah, Reggie's the real deal. Thanks so much, Greg. Nice to see you, friend. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Folks, that was Greg Jackson, again, the Deputy Director of the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. What a treat to have him joining us. Let me take a break. I promised you all some breaking news. We've shared some of the sound I read to you before from Kamala Harris's address in Pennsylvania today, addressing what her economic plans are to help the middle class. I want to share some of those policy proposal highlights with you before we get to the end of the show. And then in our next segment, you're going to want to stick here because I'm going to be talking about the American Stability Act, this absolutely groundbreaking legislation introduced today by Representative Summer Lee, a congressperson from Pennsylvania's 12th congressional district. Here are the policy proposals that Vice President Harris discussed today in Pennsylvania. Here's how she's going to lower the cost of food and groceries. She's going to advance the first ever federal ban on price gouging, specifically about food and groceries. We talked about that on this show. We know that that's happening. There have been very clear evidence that this has been happening. We've heard it on the earnings calls from some of these corporations. She's going to set clear rules of the road to make clear that big corporations cannot unfairly exploit consumers to run up these excessive profits on food and groceries. And she's going to seek new authority for the Federal Trade Commission and state attorneys general to investigate and impose strict new penalties on companies that break these rules. Second, she's going to lower the cost of renting and owning a home. She's going to lower the rent for Americans by taking on these massive corporate conglomerates that have bought up housing stocks across the country that are engaging effectively in price fixing scheme. They have been, again, marking up housing costs way above market. This is effectively collusion. It is not capitalism. It is abusive of the middle class. She's going to fight that. She's going to provide $25,000 in down payment support for first-time homeowners. Folks, man, I bet a bunch of us could use that help. She's going to put money back. This is number three. She's going to put money back into the pockets of hardworking families through a new $6,000 child tax credit for families with children in the first year of life. She will restore the American Rescue Plan's expanded child tax credit, which means up to $3,600 per child for middle class and the hardest working Americans, not the ultra wealthy, not the tax cuts for the ultra wealthy that Trump promises. She's going to cut taxes for frontline workers by expanding the earned income tax credit to cover individuals and couples in lower income jobs who aren't raising a child in their home, cutting taxes for those folks by up to $1,500. She's going to help Americans afford health insurance on the Obamacare marketplace by helping them save an average of $700 on their health insurance premium, totaling over $6,000 per year in savings that the Affordable Care Act is providing, which, by the way, Donald Trump tried to get repealed some 56 times while he was in office. Four, she's going to continue to help lower the cost of prescription drugs and relieve medical debt, capping the cost of insulin at $35 and out-of-pocket expenses for prescription drugs at $2,000. And folks, she's going to help support Black-owned businesses by expanding the tax deduction for startups and small businesses from $5,000 to $50,000. Because who can start a business off 5 G's? Nobody. We're going to talk about the Sustainability Act when we come back. Keep it locked. You cannot miss a minute of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.